Hello and welcome to Real Geeks Presents the B-Roll. Huh. Well then. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey. It's early Sunday morning and I am tired. I was up last night showing my girlfriend the Avengers for the first time. I think she enjoyed it. I don't know. It's hard to tell because sometimes she's just like, these are really, really stupid. And I'm like, I know, aren't they?
Oh, I hope you recorded that.
Oh, I really should have. But we were both also tired. So if you want to see two people slowly nodding off, well, Hulk smashes. Hey.
Over here, I, on the other hand, am on round two of COVID.
Yay! Twice as Hooray! Nice at half the price. That, yeah, great fun. Terrific, indeed.
Well, I mean, on the plus side, it's frankly been even milder than round one was. So, folks, get your booster when you can.
That's not bad. It's not bad.
Yeah, it's basically just been a mild cold, but it's also a little irritating because I've had to cancel plans because I have, what are those things called? Morals.
You can't have those. You just gotta eject that. Just don't bother. Don't bother. Live and let die. Just
So with that in mind, our planned review of 3,000 Years of Longing may not happen because if I don't test negative, I'm not going to a theater.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. There is another option. I recently watched Gérard Depardieu's Danton. on the Criterion channel. That's some yeah. I'm sure that'll get the clicks going.
Oh, I'm pretty sure about 90% of our listener base just went, "Who?"
And I die a little inside.
Right? it's called classic film, folks. Look into it sometime.
It's called Gérard Depardieu eating most of old Paris on screen. It's fantastic. My God. Where's the camera? Oh, there it is. Yeah, camera, look at me. I am Gérard Depardieu. You love me. I love you.
Nice. Now that things have gotten good and weird, let's... Get into the news, and amazingly enough, we're actually not starting with Ezra Miller.
Yay! Time and life move on. this planet no longer requires Ezra Miller news.
Instead, we are starting with Timothée Chalamet. Who was recently doing interviews to promote his upcoming film, Bones and All. And at one point, while talking to Variety, he said, quote, "To be young today, I can't imagine what it is to grow up without the onslaught of social media." I'm pretty sure Chalamet actually is young today, but moving on. At least here, in Bones and All, there are characters wrestling with internal bloodlines via growing up with Instagram or Twitter, trying to figure out where they fit in with that. Chalamet clarified, "I'm not casting judgment. You can find your tribe here." The Dune actor would go on to add, "I think it's hard to be alive now. I think societal collapse is in the air. That's why hopefully this movie will matter."
Ah, what a delightful Hollywood thing to say. It's not even about, like, Dune 2, which would matter more so. Like, more people are going to see Dune 2. More people actually, like, walk away from Dune movies being like, I wonder what that meant. I'm terribly sorry, but the very serious people who watch this film are not going to be the ones to change the world.
No, I mean, like, I saw the headline, Winter of the Art Girls, like, all I could hear was Will Ferrell going, well, that escalated quickly.
Here I thought and hoped we were just going to talk about his delightful red carpet number. But no. He had to open his mouth and have half a thought. Oh, dear. There's a lot going on in that, and it's really fascinating to come across people who, like, you know, you get celebrities who open up about how out of touch they are in a way that they think is entirely, like, this is the pulse of the community. This right here, this is the zeitgeist. I'm about to nail it and become immortal forever. And then they instead just say something that's just, like, batshit insane. I always try to apply it to something with, like, Rob Schneider saying it about Deuce Bigelow. I really think that society is collapsing. But you know what? Deuce Bigelow too. That's going to change it. That's going to turn it all around.
Well, and actually, now that you bring that up, I didn't have this as an actual story, but, and I may be the only person in media to have said this for quite a while, but speaking of Rob Schneider.
Yeah, let's give him, you know, Rob Schneider can have a little attention as a treat.
I don't know if you heard about this, but,
I have.
he was, recently, quoted as saying that when, what's her face on SNL that was doing, Hillary Clinton?
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, can't remember her name.
Kate McKinnon.
Thank you, Kate. See, anytime someone says, what's her name from SNL, for some reason my mind goes Cecily Strong, and no one ever is asking about Cecily Strong.
No.
But her name just pops in my mind. Cecily Strong. Great name.
Yeah, I don't know why I totally blanked on Kate McKinnon there, because I have actually rather enjoyed her.
Oh, yeah. No, like, listen, everyone enjoyed Kate McKinnon until it becomes just a little too much, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm good with this. Thank you very much. But, like, we all have our Kate McKinnon phase.
But recently, Rob Schneider was quoted. Yeah. You know what? We're going to keep that. Rob Schneider was quoted.
Quoted.
As saying that Saturday Night Live was, quote, done when Kate McKinnon sang Hallelujah as Hillary Clinton.
I mean, there's a lot of moments when SNL could have been done and we could have kiboshed it. For my money, I would say the episode before Rob Schneider appeared. For others, it would be the episode where they ran a 2-hour propaganda piece for Donald Trump. There's lots of choices.
Yeah, and I mean, like, Schneider was complaining that he watched the skit and was like, oh, I hope there's a punchline, but there was nothing. And you kind of can't help but sit there and think, Rob, you were done as soon as offices moved from copiers to scanners.
Yeah. Yeah. Your most famous character, like, is literally obsolete. It's not that he's not funny anymore. It doesn't make sense. If you attempted to show it to kids, they'd be like, okay, I don't know what this is.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a true mark of you're fucking old.
Yeah. Ironically enough, he's complaining about a skit that in his mind didn't have a punchline.
Mm.
His most famous skit doesn't really have a punchline.
There is no punchline to it. It just continues on and on and on and on until the camera pans out and the audience is told to clap, which is how a proper SNL skit ends. True. But come on. Recognize. And that wasn't the only specific thing he said, because, like, first of all, to go back for a moment, I really like this new term, quoested. I think we've stumbled upon something incredible, because it really truly gives an idea of how, like, it fits this so well, because of how unself-aware Rob Schneider was in his comments, one of his comments. It was something like, I don't even tell, you know, like, I don't even tell these jokes anymore. I can't tell my jokes anymore because, like, no one laughs at them or something like that. And it's like, no. Like,
yeah.
No one wants to hear your jokes anymore. No, your jokes aren't funny. It's fine. Don't worry, Rob Schneider. No one's going to be upset that your jokes aren't interesting anymore. And when someone says something that is meant to be a stand, but essentially burns them so hard themselves that it could never be matched by someone in response, that should be a quoted. You've roasted yourself with your quote.
Yes.
To which, when and if and when again we do get to merchandise, that is our first legitimate piece of merch. Quoted. Congratulations, you quoted yourself. You've made yourself a complete laughing stock via just trying to get yourself out there. And that's all this is. This is Rob Schneider's agent going like, hey, you know who hasn't worked in a while? Rob, you. And therefore, I'm not making any money either. So get your ass out there. And the best that Rob could think of, instead of doing just another Adam Sandler comedy, because Lord knows there's always that. Always. Constantly. He fucks on off to Talk TV and does the old "I'm old and canceled." Wah, because it's easier than coming up with new jokes.
Oh, frankly, it gets even worse when you consider the simple fact that I don't know if you've noticed this, but I'm pretty sure Adam Sandler has stopped calling.
Adam Sandler hit Hotel Transylvania money and went, oh, this is even better. I don't have to hang out with any of those losers anymore.
Like, in all seriousness, I don't remember the last Adam Sandler movie Rob Schneider was in.
I'm sure it's on Netflix.
Oh, no doubt. But I'm pretty sure that it has been years.
Like, Rob Schneider is so meh, he makes me appreciate Pauly Shore.
I love you so much for saying exactly that. because I swear to you, I was going to end this and go to the next article by pointing out the simple fact that Rob Schneider's best and most famous bit is a Pauly Shore impression.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to talk irrelevant.
Yeah. Whereas, what's Pauly doing now? Well, Pauly is still running a business. Like, he helps young comedians get access to stages and get them in front of producers and shit. Like, When life left Pauly and turned him into, like, a joke, like, oh, it's Pauly Shore, ha, that's so stupid. Pauly became very serious businessman, and he's well respected, and the man has an actual legacy of generations of comedians. He and his family have helped. Rob Schneider became nothing. I will always respect Pauly Shore more.
Crash. About that whole thing about Pauly Shore and respected.
Mm.
Are you familiar with the animated film The Adventures of Acella?
No.
Oh. when we are done.
Oh no.
And okay. No, you know what? I will cut stories in order to do this. Go onto YouTube right now.
All right. Let's see what we got here.
Are you ready for a fantastic adventure?
Come here, kids.
A mysterious forest. Curious kids.
Guys, wait up. There is only one way to save the tale teller. We need to find a flower which heals the sick and prolongs the life.
What kind of tales do you tell?
A kind full of kindness.
Ajayla, come to the forest.
Watch out, guys! Rocks are falling! Step aside!
Who are you?
I am Alien, the green alien. I'm going to dance for you. Are you ready?
Big story of little kids in the forest.
Yes, okay. I will not defend that kind of film, but also it's kind of funny to make those kinds of films every now and then. Someone was tweeting earlier this week that you can always tell the financial straits of some comedians or like actors by what they randomly appear on. And apparently Pierce Brosnan is on like some stupid like early morning Saturday like kids cartoon about like veterinarians or something. Very, very cheesy, very low rent. I stand by the fact that within the comedy community producing side, much like Bobcat Goldthwait, Pauly Shore is respected. This is hilarious. And I will say that, you know what, again, puts Pauly Shore over the top compared to Rob Schneider here, even with this. Rob Schneider's still not fucking working. Pauly Shore making that money.
That is a fair point. I mean, you're right. Pauly Shore did voice work for the English dub of what may be the single worst animated film ever made.
But like at that point, you almost do it to do it. Like, so few people watch or remember watching my beloved League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and with good reason. It's a piece of shit. And like for most people, that was Sean Connery's last film. And it's just like, you know, it petered out there at the end. It is not. It is not his last film.
It's not.
No.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, he voiced an absolutely terrible CGI cartoon. And the truth is, I love when someone famous takes the check. The check that clearly should have gone to animation attach themselves to an absolute failure. I find it so charming and hilarious.
Sir Billy was not a paycheck.
What?
I'm pretty sure Connery, I'm pretty sure, did that. He thought he was being patriotic. That was a government-funded film.
And he didn't get him. Oh my. Oh my. I mean, Sean was never great at reading scripts. Oh, wow. Well, then again, Pauly Shore, smarter businessman than Rob Schneider or Sean Connery put together. Pauly comes out on top again, buddy.
In the northwest coast of Scotland. In the deepest, darkest highlands, where evil lurks. And tragedy unfolds. There lies a secret.
They need only one man. The guardian of the Highlands. A grandpa. Sir Sean Connery is Sir Billy.
My name is William. Billy to my friends.
It's a race against time. And the odds and a villainous policeman are against them. Who will get to Bessie first? Can this octogenarian and his goat save the day? With Alan Cumming as Gordon the Goat, together they will take you on the ride of your life and keep you at the edge of your seat. Sir Sean Connery is Sir Billy, the kind of grandpa we all wish we had.
Sub shoe reminds me of another adventure.
Oh, next up, Ezra Miller.
At least we got, you know, through one segment without without all. Well, actually, we got through two segments. Ooh, amazing! Such restraint.
Well, remember, I did say that we were not starting with Ezra Miller.
I did
not say they would not be making an appearance.
Yeah, I gotta read that contract closer.
Now, in this case, I'm referring to Miller's appearance in the TIFF closing film Dolly Land, where they played a younger version of Salvador Dali. And you're not going to believe this. There were no problems with Ezra Miller during the making of the film.
Curious. I wonder who the producer and director and handlers on that film were, and if possibly they treated them like an adult and expected them to get shit done instead of just like letting them go off on their every whim. I wonder.
According to director Mary Harron, who people probably know from American Psycho, she had Miller in mind to star as Dolly in the film for nearly a decade, but it was this weird case of, quote, at that point, the producers and everyone were saying, well, you can't cast them because they're not a big enough star. And then a year later, they were too big a star and had to drop out because they got Fantastic Beasts and then later got The Flash. And Harron added, they stayed very loyal to the project for years, even when other people dropped out right and left because of schedule changes and the pandemic. Now, there were, of course, rumors of Miller being cut from the film because their name was, for some reason, not included in the cast list of the official TIFF announcement. Now, I think this next bit will probably go to a lot of why Miller was, you know, human on the set. Since wrapping Dolly Land, Miller was arrested multiple times and accused of abuse. Miller was, of course, later released a statement that they were seeking a treatment for complex mental health issues. However, according to Harron, Ezra Miller turned in a, quote, completely realized performance and had no issues on set. They were very professional and nice to everybody. There was no trouble or a sign of trouble on set, so it was very upsetting and terrible to read what happened later. Reading this stuff was very sad for everybody involved. Hopefully they're getting help for what sounds like a very, very serious break. Herron added that the film was, quote, completely finished and wrapped by the time Miller's behavior became public, so the role could not be edited out.
Okay, well, that's really interesting. So,
yeah.
Between then and later then, stuff happened in Ezra Miller's life. Very curious. I still am very interested to hear the difference between, like, how that production was run and how the talent was treated. Because you can change a lot of an actor's personality based on how you approach them and treat them as, like, are you treating them as a celebrity or are you treating them as an employee or are you treating them as an artist or are you treating them as like, are you practically fucking Svengali? You know, like there's so many different approaches that creates different responses. I can't help but think of Ricardo Montalban on Wrath of Khan. And the first day he appears on set, he's like bellowing his lines. He is at like 12 on a, you know, it goes up to 10 and he's on 12. It doesn't even, you know, 11? Fuck you, Spinal Tap. I am bigger than you! And everyone's like, wow, that certainly was a performance, Ricardo Montalban. Sweet fucking Jesus, what are we going to do with this? And the director takes him aside and he's like, that was great. I have some notes. And Montalban, like, pretty much stops and goes, oh, you're going to direct me. Oh. Oh, okay then. Because apparently, and like, this man had worked with, like, massive directors for years and years and years, and it was assumed that it's like, oh, you know, you're a celebrity. You know how to act. You've been doing this. You know what to do in a scene. And he was just like, I don't fucking know. You gotta, like, tell me this stuff. Like if a director in a production actually works with an actor and treats them with respect as, like, creative partners, you get better performances, and we got Khan. It was fantastic. But if you treat them like a star, you get star behavior, and stars are jackasses, you know? And you'll get lesser performances. And so I bet Ezra's performance in this film is fantastic. And their behavior was great. And then they became unnecessarily famous on a toxic set. And then unnecessarily famous on another toxic set. And it's just, okay, you can kind of see how this could roll, you know?
Yeah. Just to kind of add at least a little bit to that, the director's final quote here: I'm not condoning anything they've done wrong. I think it doesn't matter how talented someone is. If they've done anything wrong, they have to face it. I also think that clearly this is not just a young star acting out. This is much more serious. This seems like something that needs a serious intervention, which I hope has happened. Which I'm reading that and thinking, on a smaller production like this, does the director see that, okay, something is clearly wrong with my actor. I'm getting this taken care of now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have to, because your budget's already so small. You're, you know, with movies like this, studios used to look at this as like bread and butter. They would give you all the time and money you needed. You know, like, they're not going to give you an enormous budget, but if you go a little over, they'll be like, that's fine. Now, these are the gambles. The bread and butter are the main events, the holy shit throwdowns. This is where it's like, you know, we're not going to make money back on this until we, like, sell it to a streaming service, right? Therefore, if anything goes wrong on this production, anything at all, we're going to kibosh it so quick. So, yeah, the producer, the director would have to be on that super quick. They got to make sure that, like, nothing interrupts this. And it would have to be outright, like, help. Not placating, because that just pushes the problem down the line. You know,
yeah.
And it doesn't fix it, and it becomes more expensive. It's easier to actually fix the problem for a film like this than to not. Whereas for big budget, holy shit films, if there's trouble in paradise going in, then that's what the story becomes. No one was talking about the production of this film. There are not hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of nerds on YouTube going on and on about the behind the scenes details of this movie. You know, if you tell the title of it, which I myself have forgotten, if you tell the title of it to any of those nerds, they will not recognize it. I do not recognize it. It can have that kind of activity behind the scenes. Not so much anything with the wizard or the superheroes.
No.
You got to bury that and move on. Bury and move on. And that's not healthy.
No, exactly. And I think that was probably, in Miller's case, a lot of exactly what happened. Because on a big budget studio film, you know, as you basically said, it's placate, put a Band-Aid on it, just get the movie done.
Yeah, get it done. There's so much money riding on this, and so many deals, and so much merchandise. And, you know, like, the Flash merchandising deals came and went. That was a couple of months ago at this point. I think that's hilarious. And we're still not going to see that movie until sometime next year, maybe, probably at this point. But it's just like, oh my God, the amount of money that's already been lost. Breathtaking.
Oh, indeed. And now you've brought up Star Trek briefly earlier, and speaking of which, Bleeding Cool is reporting that there's going to be another appearance on season 3 of Picard, as in a fuller TNG reunion than we were led to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all people, Denise Crosby announced at the recent Star Trek Las Vegas that she is going to be returning for the third season of Star Trek Picard. But we don't know how or in what capacity or anything.
I hope it's actually the mystery of the season. And it just outright begins with, like, there's a knock at Picard's door, opens the door. There's Tasha Yar. And she's older. And her question is, Captain, what the hell happened? Last I remember, I got, like, thrown by some fucking tar beast. And what happened? And that's why they have to get everyone together. It's just like, Tasha Yar is back. What the fuck happened?
Just a super
simple whodunit. The answer is the Ferengis. She's a clone. You just sell Tasha Yars. They're so rare.
Oh, well, I mean, on the one hand, that I think that does mirror how Sochi was introduced back in season 1.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, maybe a little too much, but at the same time, that's another one of those where I'm going, I want it just because I'm going, what would they do?
Get everyone together. Just like the first episode is everyone in Picard's living room just being like, but what? Huh? How? Why? Why? What? Huh? Also, where's Data? When Data's not on screen, all the characters should be asking, where's Data?
Now, of course, there's speculation that it's going to be an alternate timeline version of Yar.
Oh, that old chestnut.
Yeah, the whole season is actually yesterday's Enterprise Part 2.
Wait, to which, like, listen, I'm not going to complain if that literally, like, if they figured out how to really nail it. On one of my other shows, Multiverse of Marketing, we're currently doing the DC and Gold Key Star Trek runs, the earlier comics that Star Trek had. And there is an absolutely wonderful story DC did in the TNG era, I think around like 92 or something, that is literally, what if we took yesterday's Enterprise and Best of Both Worlds and just mashed the script together? And it's Worst of Both Worlds, I believe it's called. And it's in a alternate universe where Locutus won the Battle of Wolf 3-9. Oh. Yeah. And
Wolf 3-5-9. Oh, yeah.
Wolf 3-5-9.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, and it's like Riker has an eye patch and all they have is the battle bridge version. Like the saucer was destroyed. And it's them enlisting the help of the normal universe TNG crew to stop Locutus's expansion of the Borg, because in their universe the Borg have literally conquered like Starfleet. And it's one of those simple things of, you know, sometimes the best Star Trek stories are the most obvious. And it's like, yeah. What worked? Best of Both Worlds, yesterday's Enterprise. Okay. Hear me out. What if both of those at the same time? What if I put peanut butter inside the chocolate?
Yes.
And I hope that they finally figure out. Like, I don't have the complaints with Picard that a lot of people have had. Any Picard more so than, like, beyond 1994 is good Picard. In my mind, I'm not going to complain necessarily, but it's not been the best Star Trek.
No.
It's not been the best Star Trek. And so if they figure out the secret recipe for season 3 and close on that and simply just do a, what's the best stuff that you enjoyed from TNG? And we're just going to fucking mash it together. I'll be happy. I like just watching Denise Richards. There's something about her performances, like, very intense, very good, very cheesy.
I mean, fair, fair. Now, Denise Crosby.
I like watching Denise Crosby's performances. Very intense, very, very shallow but fun. Yeah. Let's go with that.
Yeah. The only theory that they've brought up here for how Yar might return, the only one that I would want to put the kibosh on is Bleeding Cole suggests that, quote, as with Mark Hamill in the current Star Wars Disney Plus TV series, The Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett, CG was used to de-age the actor with a body double stand-in and voice cloning technology also available to make the actor sound younger, too.
Brent Spiner standing on the sidelines going, you killed me! We could have done this and you just killed me? You bastards.
Yeah, like, I'm sitting here reading that and going, this is, we're talking about Paramount Plus. Not Disney Plus. Paramount ain't got that kind of money. I mean, they're not as bad off as Warner Brothers Discovery, granted.
No, but however, like, it's a smaller studio. It's an older studio. Yeah. Yes, they've been around forever. Sure, absolutely. But the best that Star Trek has to offer is literally the best Paramount has to offer. So just keep that in mind when wondering, hey, why don't they do this? And it's like, because the money has already gone into the ships.
Yeah.
Like, we have to make Star Trek look a certain level of base decent, and that takes a lot of fucking cash now. That's why I think they love Lower Decks so much, because it's like, it doesn't fucking matter, just draw it. Don't care. The geniuses at Filmation had it right Gene Roddenberry was wrong. This should have been an animation the whole goddamn time.
Oh, yeah. No, like, Filmation... Filmation was literally able to do entire episodes with, like, just one background the entire time. And you never questioned it.
How big you need that Spock to be? 2 stories tall? No problem. I'll just draw Spock taller. Ooh.
Oh, and now, and also with that in mind, like, I'm sorry, the only way we're going to get the de-aging and the voice cloning is if your whodunit theory actually pans out. Because they're only going to invest that much in Tasha Yar if Tasha Yar is essential to the entire season-long story.
Tasha Yar is, of course, a nexus between universes, which is a valid thing that could be said based on specifically yesterday's Enterprise. Like, an argument could be made that, like, oh no, like, one of the most, like, have Wesley come back and be like, listen, team, thanks for coming together. Shut up, Wesley. You shut the fuck up, Jean-Luc. You shut the fuck up now, because I am speaking and I am a traveler. That outranks you, you old bastard. And he lays out, like, there are points and people in time that matter. Throw in a fucking Doctor Who speech about, like, you know, points in time. It cannot be changed. He says, and Tasha Yar's one of them. Well, something's gone wrong. Tasha Yars are disappearing from other universes, and reality is starting to collapse. So we need to gather a league of Tasha Yars, and it's just like a dozen different Tasha Yars. One of them has a robot arm, and they have to go and fight. Let's say. No, we are. God damn it! They've oddly enough gone through almost every villain. They've managed to touch on everything in the last 5 years, through their various shows. It's kind of impressive.
Yeah.
So fuck it. I guess we're back to the Klingons. Yeah. We've gone full circle. Everyone else has been touched on. It's either gotta be the Ferengi or the Klingons.
No, I was just gonna say, because you brought them up earlier, and if you want to go really hardcore deep cut, you make the Ferengi the villain. But at this point in the timeline, the Ferengi are the badass galactic superpower that they were originally intended to be.
Oh my god,
season one of TNG.
Have the last season of Picard actually rehabilitate the villainy of and imposing danger of the Ferengi. That would be brilliant. And actually land it with, like, there, they are a threat again. Quark is overthrown and beheaded by like a violent reactionary faction. That would be amazing. Who's it led by? Tasha Yar.
I love how through that entire thing there, you basically made Tasha Yar Star Trek's River Song.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, she kind of was.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I know that Denise Crosby didn't have the same kind of, like, training that Summer Glau had. Literally, Summer Glau was, like, an award-winning ballerina, if I recall.
Yeah.
And so, like, when she's doing flips and kicks and all that, she's actually doing that shit. I'm pretty sure Denise Crosby, she could probably do the tuck and roll, but that's about it. You know, the Star Trek tuck and roll, where you get thrown and you tuck and roll.
Yeah. Yeah, the tuck and roll is basically a requirement for passing the audition.
Okay, let me see you tuck and roll. Now throw yourself out of a chair. Mm-hmm. Now into a wall. Yeah, that's some good.
I wish wish I had someone to torture.
Hey, Armis!
Shut up.
You look like a big bag of crap.
Who said that? Show yourself. I am Armis. This is my domain.
Yeah, we already know you're Armis, dummy.
Come and find us. We're touching your stuff.
What stuff? Stop that! When I find you, I'm gonna kill you with a flake of my power. I am a skin of evil.
More like a puddle of
Damn you!
Have you heard of the film My Son Hunter?
I have not. I'm going to presume it's about Hunter Biden, and I'm going to presume it's the one that that crazy Nazi chick from The Mandalorian has like a part in it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Based on this apparent, I assume you have not seen the trailer.
I've literally seen the trailer, but like I didn't tap it and listen to it. I saw it in passing. Someone was making a comment on it in passing on Twitter, and so like it auto plays. And I'm aware that a vast majority of the trailer is whoever's portraying Hunter Biden just like drinking incessantly. From what I understand, it's a movie of like. He's so bad, and he does all the... he has so much fun. Oh, look at him having fun over there. And it's like, you know, without the audio or, like, the contextual understanding that this is a right-wing attack against the President of the United States, that could just be, like, any party movie. It could be a party movie where it's about having fun. It could be a party movie where the guy grows up and, like... gets into a heteronormative relationship and it's like supposed to be a rom-com. It could be a party movie in which it turns out like it's like a combination of Fight Club and Dark City. It could be anything. You could go anywhere from this. Half of it looks like fucking Swordfish in that it looks 20 years old.
So basically you have not truly sat down and watched this trailer.
I have not truly sat down and watched this trailer. This trailer has appeared before my eyes and I have rejected it.
So I'll tell you what's going down.
You know who I am.
They told me you were VIP. Well connected to the government.
What kind of a moron forgets to pick up his laptop at a repair shop? You're a Biden. Act like one. Everything he built, his life, I just ruined it all.
I want to know everything that's on that laptop that can ruin my erection.
My friends, it's time to party!
Didn't you know? I'm taking control. I'm making appearance and I gotta go. Cause I get them dancing with their hands up. Yeah, I walk in and they go bananas. I'm a bad guy.
I'm an artist.
Tell me how I can help you.
Well, I don't deserve help.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I've been through worse.
You're the smartest man I know.
Thanks, Dad.
I just wish I could smack some sense into you.
I'll never forget Corey Bob. He was a bad dude. No joke.
Dad, we were talking about suffering.
No.
I can't seem to find anything but positive stuff on the Bidens.
Who's the point man for the foreign policy in the Obama regime?
Joe Biden.
So it looks like he needs $1 billion.
So the obvious next question is,
where's Hunter?
I can remember getting paid some money. But I can't remember what for.
Well, my dad says we never discuss my businesses, period.
Or my cut.
What's happening in there? Joe's in on it.
Party's over!
You had everything, Hunter, and you threw it all away. You hope the laptop will take down everybody with you.
Get out!
China's not our enemy.
They're not bad folks.
I love my dad, and I just want to make him proud. I am the one who brings in all the deals. I am the one.
The boy.
Like, good Lord, this looks so cheap. Again, like it looks 20 years old. It looks like it was made by someone who hates fun. And I truly don't understand the point of, like, people truly despise this guy, and I just don't give a fuck about it. And it's like, you're sliding into Nazism, and you care about this? How fucking worthless.
Do you remember Robert Davi?
Vaguely, yes.
He was, amongst other things, the villain in License to Kill. He was in one of the federal agents in the first Die Hard.
Wow, what an incredible career.
Yeah, I was like he went super conservative and wanted to go into filmmaking himself. And apparently from looks of this trailer, he wanted to make Wolf of Wall Street so badly, but didn't have the money or a clue.
Yeah, it just looks like a parody of itself.
Yeah.
It's so... Yeah, it feels like a student film attempting to be Wolf of Wall Street, attempting to be... American Hustle, attempting to be so many things, and it just looks so cheap. Oh my god. I can't believe people wasted their own personal money on that. Because no studio actually touched that. I mean, Breitbart did, but you know, no. Breitbart was founded by a decaying Nazi and a traitor. So, you know, it's kind of funny to see them, when they should be like, trying to leave the country before they end up locked away for the rest of their lives, wasting their time with this bullshit.
Hey, and before we go to wrap up, speaking of trying to leave the country, now, Fan Expo is, of course, I think it's either, as we're recording, currently happening in Toronto or like just wrapped up. I can't remember the dates, so I don't know which.
I mean, it's Sunday morning. And everyone's got a hangover regardless.
Fair. And of course, Fan Expo had booked Gina Carano to appear in Toronto.
Why?
I think what essentially it was they they're all run by this one big company, and I think they book actors from different shows like in bulk.
Hmm.
And as soon as Corona was announced, and I think this was like back in May, everybody on social media everywhere was like, I'm pretty sure she can't come into the country.
Yeah, she literally cannot enter the country.
And at the time, Corona was like, you know, I'm looking forward to coming to Toronto and meeting all my fans. And then we fast forward to about a week before the con, and guess what happened?
Oh, please, God, let me know. Leah, tell me that bitch got stopped at the border.
Gina Carano announced that she would not have to cancel her appearance at Fan Expo because she was not allowed into the country due to our COVID vaccine mandates.
Aw, sorry, Nazi. Go home.
And yeah, and again, the universal response was pretty much, the only person who didn't see this coming was you.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, like, you almost feel like Toronto booked her knowing that she'd have to cancel, thus be in breach of contract, and thus they would get their money back.
I mean that, and the general rule of thumb that most of these bigger cons will book like a shit ton of actors with the expectation that probably a third of them will cancel.
I mean, that's true. That said, one, what idiot, like, even if you're booking in bulk, why is Gina still included in those bulk options? Why? Like, she should have been ejected from that entirely. It just shouldn't be an option. Is John Voighton there? What about Ben Shapiro?
Oh, well, Corona's Kiss, I can't remember the specifics, but I don't think season two of The Mandalorian had come out yet.
Oh, is it? It was booked that long ago. My God.
Yeah, yeah. This was like very early in the year. I think early spring, give or take.
Yeah, but she burned herself like last year or the year before.
True. I'm just thinking that booking agents probably weren't paying a whole lot of attention to that, and B, at that point, I think her appearance on The Mandalorian still had enough relevance that you would just go down a cast list and go, oh, she was in it. We'll book her.
Jesus Christ. I would hope that an organizer would have more sense than that. She's an overt right-wing pro-fascist.
Yeah.
Like, people knew this 2 years ago. There's really no excuse except, like, pure ignorance and naivety, in which case, what are you doing organizing a community event? Jesus. Yeah. No, I actually am more willing to believe that they tried to sneak one by than to believe that they did not know that. That there's no way to have not known that, and after the response that I'm sure it got to not immediately cancel shows intent.
Oh yeah, no, you know, for like, I mean, like it's one of those, I can see why they probably did it, but I'm also one of those, I was also one of the first ones going, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's fucked up. And yeah, like, no excuse.
It's corporate ignorance. It's corporate ignorance.
Still, like, yeah. Somewhere in there, there had to have been someone who said, no, she's a Nazi. We're not going to do this. And especially with the response, it shouldn't have taken until she got stopped at the border. There should have been an immediate, right, sorry about that. That's weird.
Oh, yeah, no, like, I mean, like I said, I can see why, but at the same time, I do completely agree with you. Like, I have no doubt that there was that someone who said, this is not a good idea. I'm willing to bet that someone got completely ignored. And on that cheery note.
Well, that was fun. like just a, God damn it. Someone in Toronto's an idiot. And I know that's not a revelation, but yeah. Someone in Toronto's an idiot.
I mean, frankly, if my son Hunter wasn't going to require a subscription to Breitbart to watch, I would put it on our list specifically to make fun of it.
Oh, God. Oh, that would be so hard to watch. It's just like, incompetence and agenda make for a really bad film.
Oh, yeah, like, it's so much, oh, you think you're doing something.
And not, again, quoting yourself. And if you want some sweet-ass quoting merchandise in the future, you should like, share, subscribe, get us out there. Our numbers are growing quite well, actually. So someday we'll be able to make money off of this. And once we make money off of this, we can invest that in merch like Quosting. Yay. So leave all of that, do all of that, get us out there, get us more, help us grow bigger. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or queries, send them to Mike at,
realgeekshfx@gmail.com, and we will also take donations for our Breitbart subscriptions so we can mock the hell out of this movie.
Or funnel it into something better, like, I don't know, renting Pauly Shore films. Far better.
Or we could get a hold of this, mock the shit out of it, put that episode on your Patreon, and then whatever money we were able to get from that episode, We could donate to like LGBTQ organizations.
That's not bad. That's not a bad idea. No. Similarly, I now percolating in the back of my mind is the Weasel Fest, Pauly Shore Movie Film Festival 2022, buddy. That's the entire title.
Oh, but we can also be reached on Twitter at RealGeeksHFX. If you want me directly, you can find me at The Merit Time Lord on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, TheMeritTimeLord@gmail.com for email. Frankly, I'm not that hard to find on Facebook, but if I don't know who you are, I'm probably going to ignore your friend request.
And I can be found on Twitter at Friday in Halifax and everywhere else at Crash and Burn. And I have no idea what we're watching next because, as you said, you are sicky, sick, 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 and thus probably should not be out in public. So we're probably going to end up hitting Netflix or something again. Yeah. My offer of Gérard Depardieu's Danton still stands.
Oh, don't tempt me. Don't tempt me. But until whatever the hell we're doing next.
Goodbye.
See ya.